The first rains of October, coming up next on this special edition of The Right Stuff. The Queen Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me for this show. I am looking forward to sharing with you my guest co-host and contributor today, Anthony Barbera. He is the author of the book, The First Rains of October. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And it's not just this book we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about some of his other works that I cannot wait to introduce you to in just a few moments. Definitely want to thank all of you for your support of my newest release, A Groom for Altar, which is book 7 of the Blizzard Bride series. It's available for you to pick up on Amazon exclusively. And I also want to thank those who have read the standalone prequel to that book called The Butterscotch Bride. Your response to both of those books has been absolutely phenomenal. If you haven't had a chance to pick up either of those, they're available Amazon. The Butterscotch Bride is available for 99 cents, and the book A Groom for Altar is available at full price at $2.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious? We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
How do fantasy and sci-fi help make us into better people? And how can Christians best glorify our Lord Jesus Christ as we enjoy these stories? Also, where can you find the best fantastical Christian novels? Yes, they do exist, and we know exactly where to find them.
From the creators of Lorehaven magazine and from biblical Christian storytellers around the world comes a new podcast for readers of amazing stories. We call it Fantastical Truth.
I'm E. Stephen Burnett.
And I'm Zachary Russell. Our mission is to find biblical truth in fantastic stories. We apply the wonders of these imaginary worlds to the real world our Creator has called us to serve.
Toward that chief end, we will find the best novels by Christian authors, fantasy, science fiction, and beyond. Together, we will explore these stories in light of the gospel, and we'll join these authors and other creative friends on this joyful journey to find the happiness and holiness of Jesus by exploring his gift of truthful imagination.
Please subscribe at lorehaven.com or on podcast players everywhere.
Join us in this eternal quest to seek and find fantastical truth.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to a special edition of The Right Stuff with the Queen, Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me. It looks like there may have been some slight technical difficulties while I was just thanking our corporate sponsors and our partners who have helped us with the right stuff, and also thanking you for picking up on my books, The Butterscotch Bride and A Groom to Altar. But now we are going to dig deep down and dirty into The First Rains of October. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And I'm so excited to showcase this book to you. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest co-host and contributor today, Anthony Barbera. Anthony, how are you doing today?
Hi there. Hi, Parker. Thanks for inviting me on. I'm excited to be here.
And thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be here with me today. I was really, really excited to have you. And I remember the way I found your book, Anthony, was actually through a typo. I was looking up something else on Amazon, and I did a typo. I don't know what it was now. And I said, oh, this looks interesting. I remember saying that, like, oh, this looks interesting. And then someone said, I can't believe this is Christian fiction. It has really hard-hitting stuff and some swearing and cussing. I said, oh, wow, that just titillates me even more. So I ended up buying the book, and now we're having this opportunity to talk about The First Rains of October as well as some of your other works as too. We're also going to talk about Jonah here, which is also available on Amazon. But it's really good to talk to you, and I really love the way your writing style is. I'll tell listeners about later on in the interview. But I'm really excited to showcase you to our listeners. And the best way to do that, as always, is to go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I started writing probably about 20 years ago. I was making films and videos for different companies, and I was actually writing music as well for them. And I did some historical parts for I lived in the town of Sonoma, so there was a lot of history there from Vallejo and from the time when it was first California's first moved there. There was a lot of history involved, and I got so involved when writing the historical parts, and I enjoyed it so much, I decided to go ahead and write a novel. I wrote a couple screenplays first, but then I wrote Catching Baby Moses. That was my first novel. I wasn't sure I could write a novel, to be quite candid with you, and I just decided, you know, I'm going to go ahead and do that. And so I wrote Catching Baby Moses, and which was sort of it's a coming-of-age story about a young boy. And then after I finished that, I wrote The First Rains of October. And that took a few years. And so from there, I did write a few screenplays in between. But The First Rains of October was set in 1977 in California. And I put it between two counties that were in existence. So one was Sonoma and the one above it was Mendocino. So I stuck a county in between and I called it Fallon, the town Fallon. So, and it was set on a dairy. It is set on a dairy farm. I don't know what it is with me with cows. I just like cows. I mean, they're all right away. I was living in Sonoma. There was cows everywhere and I just kind of have an affinity towards them. They're docile, gentle creatures. So, for some reason I decided to put it on a dairy farm. And that's where it all began. Sometimes when you're writing a novel, you might start with a location, which will be the impetus for what you want to do. Like that's how Catching Baby Moses began. I could see this area down below where I was working in this kind of marshy area, and I visualized somebody living there. And the whole story started with a place, a setting. Now, The First Rains of October started with a storyline, a person's life. A girl disappears off a cliff at her high school graduation, and nobody knows what happened to her. And 10 years later, her boyfriend comes back to town, who's been in jail, excuse me, for 10 years for her murder. He's accused of her murder, and she comes back at the same time he does. So it's a unique little storyline in that regard.
What I like about First Rains of October, too, is that, as I was telling you before the broadcast, it's really immersive, and that's a word I like because when you are playing virtual reality games, the whole thing about the game is that you are immersed in the world. You feel sensations, and the game does a really good good job of making sure that you are there, you know. And here in the first rains of October, you are there. You're in this small community full of people who are down-to-earth people, so they're going to be quite honest about their feelings. They're going to be very connected to the earth. Even the title, First Rains of October, really connects to that because of what's happening with harvest, what's happening with the dairy farms, what's happening around town. There's a lot that's involved in the story. And one of the things I appreciate about the First Rains of October is that you really depict this town in a very realistic light. And one of the things I've often said on this show is that Christian fiction is not safe fiction. It's fiction that really tackles hard issues of life. And I think you did that particularly in this story because this guy is accused of killing this woman, and his life is gone, 10 years gone.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, how is it that he got second-degree murder and there's no body? You know, I remember thinking that as I was reading the story, like, how did that happen? You know, but then this is 1975, and so things are a little bit different than they are now. After in the 90s when DNA really started to overturn a lot of cases from back in the day, that's when it really started. So we're probably still back before in the Columbo days. I love Columbo in Columbo and, you know, things of that nature. So just one more question. I love Columbo. Love Columbo. And most of my listeners know that. So we have this story here. And you tell us that you started writing about 20 years ago, and then you didn't know if you could write a novel, and you can. Obviously, you can. This is your, I think, your fourth published novel that you have out right now, as well as some other published works you'll tell us about later on in the broadcast. My next question has to deal with your writing process. And I always ask this question, Anthony, because we do have aspiring authors out there whom God has given the gift to write. But I always like to share your process because someone out there may say, I don't know how I'm going to get started on this book idea I've had for the last 12 years. So by you sharing your process, whatever it is, whether it's haphazard, whether it's extremely structured, doesn't matter. By you sharing that idea, I hope to give inspiration to others who want to know what you do. So go ahead, tell us about your writing process.
Sure, that's a fun question. As an author, every book, if you looked at the works I've written over the last 20 years, each one of my books is in a different genre. That's kind of a no-no for an author. It's not a great means for success. But in my mind, if I can't delve into a world and learn something new and unique about it, I really don't really want to write the book. So the First Rains of October, when I went about the process of writing and when I came up with the exact story, or as I was working with the story, the first thing I wanted to do is go to a dairy farm and find out what's it really like on a dairy farm. And since I had a lot of them around me, I visited a number of dairy farmers. And one of the farmers took me into the milking facility and showed me how his herd of cows worked. I learned about how different animals feed, how they take care of. So it was a process. It was me learning about dairy farming so that the background of the story, no matter what the story is, no matter what the setting is, that you have a foundation of a background that's real. You're not just pulling stuff out of the air, so that you're bringing to pass and you're putting somebody in a real community that really exists. So part of the process is the research. Now, no matter what the book is, the research takes some time. Now, I know there's people that just throw books out there and just start writing and they just write their book. That's just not the way I operate. It's not the way I work. I can't really do it that way. As a matter of fact, I start in a pretty big general palette. I may diagram. I may have a number of folders. I'll have pictures. I'll have lines. I'll have actually an outline like you'd see in school. So I know where my first act is, you know, as I'm progressing, as I'm learning about the characters. And as you're doing it, the characters start to grow up inside the story. So every story is different. Every way of approaching it's a little bit different. Like I look back on some of my notebooks and they're all written out. There's pictures in them. There's now the newer things on the book I just finished called The Surety. There's a whole book of notes as big as the book A Surety is, because it was set in space and I didn't know a lot about space travel. So I had to understand and work through that process. And I'm giving you an example of the kind of different ones. Now, the other book, Jonah in the Time of the Kings, I went to England and I went to India. I couldn't go to Nineveh, where Jonah is set, because that's Iraq and we're in the middle of a war. So I had to go to England, and I went with my wife to the British Museum and went through a lot of the artifacts, so that when I wrote the story, I had reality. I had real. There's a lot of great real artifacts about Nineveh and that was set in the 8th century in Israel, right there in the British Museum. Then I went to India, because that was a place that had the lifestyle up in the mountains as close to the biblical lifestyle of Jonah as I could find at the time. So that helped me a lot. So every book's different. As we approach every book, it's a different process. And hopefully for me, as a writer, I'm learning something new that's adding to my understanding of humanity, of life. As a Christian, you know, every one of my books I look at it this way. Christian fiction is any novel that states and illustrates a Christian worldview in its plot, its character, or both. So how do we approach that without being – how do you write a story? Every author has a worldview. Every author does. Now, as a Christian, not all your characters are Christians. Maybe none of them are. So we get back to the first rains of October. You've got – one gal who's not a Christian. You've got the one telling the story. He's not a Christian. But through the process of the story, somebody goes through a change. And if in a story there's no real change, or if there's no real dynamic where you see somebody's not a very nice person and they may not speak. Now, the first rains of October has some swearing, not that much. But it does have some language. These are real people. They're not Christians. So we bring somebody through it in a situation where they learn to see, what is it to be a Christian? What does it take? And how does my mind change? So that's a little bit about the process. I know it's different for every book. And so hopefully that's a little helpful.
I have to piggyback on something that you said. You said they're real people who swear. And I have to say, there are some Christians who can swear worse than some people than we know, because they hit their toe or they slam their finger in the door, and it's not "thank you, Jesus" coming out their mouths. You know what I mean? And so I like to say, as my pastor would say, keep it real, keep it 100, don't lie. Or my mother would say, tell the truth and shame the devil. I also like the fact of how you mentioned going to do your research. You went to India. We recently just distributed to India with the last couple of months. And so, as always, I want to thank our Indian listeners for tuning into the show, because India has a rich textual history that doesn't change. That's one thing about Indian culture that I've come to appreciate, particularly when I wrote my one book. I did one book where an Indian girl falls in love with, quote unquote, trailer trash, if you will. And their dynamic. And so I had to reach out to all my Indian friends. I had to reach out, do research, all this stuff I had to do. And it's that very close-knit community, that love of tradition, all these things kind of work together. So I can really feel you when you mentioned that about that culture, Indian culture. I love Indian food. Oh, my gosh, I love Indian food. I can eat Indian food all day. And the best Indian food is homemade, the best Indian food ever. You can go to a restaurant. That's great. Best Indian food is homemade. So, yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to our new Indian listeners out there who have been supporting the show now. And another thing that you mentioned that I liked is that every book is different. And even though you've written in different genres, you say you like to learn something new. But I also believe, too, that every book that you write, you get better at this thing called writing. I hope you do anyway.
I agree.
Because you're going to receive feedback of some sort. If it's just someone who doesn't like your story, okay, you don't like my story. But someone says, hey, you use too many of this word. And there's a word that I use in my books. I use the word "that" a lot. And it wasn't until someone pointed out to me, I said, oh, my gosh, you're right. I do use that word "that" a lot. And I said,
Yeah.
And you try to just pull back from that. And then some other things that come to mind, you know, stylistic things that come to mind. So each book, you hopefully get better. And I want to tell you, too, having different genres, I honestly don't think it's a bad idea. If anything, you stretch different parts of the gray matter there. Because if you're going to go to space, you're going to obviously use a more technical part of your brain. If you're going fantasy, you're going to use the more imagination part, but even though that logical part is still there because you got to do a lot of world building. Here you had to go learn about dairy, and I'm a city girl through and through. My listeners know that. So I announced this yesterday, Anthony, that I'm going to be riding a horse sometime this year. I'm going to go
see
a friend of mine. And yeah, I'm quite terrified, actually, but I've been looking up horse things online, and my girlfriend just laughed her lungs out as I was telling her, asking her questions about horses, and I'm like, what do you wear, and do they bite, and just all kind of odd questions, and she's just going to look forward to recording me, and I'll probably become a meme after this year. I finally get that fame I was looking for, and so, yeah, so lots of things with that. And that's why when I was reading the first Rains of October and I got that feel of the community, I just really resonated with that, Anthony. So that was pretty good. What we're going to do right now is take a quick short break. When we come back, we're going to be delving into the first Rains of October with my guest. If you have a question, feel free to call in 646-668-8485. Or press 1 to be live on air. Or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag write stuff with your questions or comments. We'll be right back after these messages.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The SpecFaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory. Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
Christian authors and writers, welcome to Readio. Readio app, developed exclusively for showcasing Christian fiction and nonfiction ebooks and audiobooks. Tired of book sales plummeting due to algorithm-influenced unrelated classifications? Books lost amongst non-Christian content? Readio allows you to reach your target audience, who's eager to devour your Most High God-inspired books in a variety of Christian subgenres. You write in a niche market. Readio solely caters to it. Follow at Readio App today on social media or visit readioapp.com to know when we are accepting author catalog uploads. Readio, the best app for the Most High-influenced ebooks and audiobooks.
Hi, my name is Kevin Newsom, and I am the host of the Christian Arts and Entertainment Podcast. I am an author, musician, and worship pastor. On my podcast, we talk art and entertainment in all its forms: music, writing, movies, art, and more. Join us each week as we wrestle with two questions: what is a Christian artist's responsibility when creating art, and what is a Christian consumer's responsibility when consuming art? You'll find the Christian Arts and Entertainment Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and in full video on YouTube. Go to www.pressepic.com for more information. Be sure to subscribe on YouTube and in your podcast app, and I'll see you soon.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to this special edition of The Right Stuff with the Queen, Parker J, on WPJC 104.5. Again, so glad you're here with me. I am having a phenomenal time talking to my guest co-host and contributor today, Anthony Barbera. He is the author of the book, The First Rains of October. It's a young adult book, I want to call it, or maybe, I don't know, like a slice of life book. There's so many different layers to the story that I had a hard time categorizing it. But whatever it is, it's a really good book. I know you're going to enjoy it. So make sure you pick up your copy of The First Rains of October today on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. This isn't one of those squeaky, clean, wholesome books, but it does have a definitive Christian message woven throughout it. So there is some subject matter that you may find uncomfortable. There's some swearing, some violence, but not real gratuitous, in my opinion, not real gratuitous. So you're going to enjoy the story. And once again, Anthony, thank you so much for being with me on the show as we continue to discuss The First Rains of October and your other works. But I definitely want to delve into The First Rains of October, since that's the one I've been reading. And one of the questions I got to ask you is, what is the story behind the title? Because as I was reading it, I see it more, like I said earlier, I see like a harvest thing, things growing, things of that nature. But what did you think about when you came with the title for the story?
You know, I'm not really sure how the title, that title, it was early on that usually a title comes to me pretty quickly. If I'm going to write a story, I kind of need a title. So that title, The First Rains of October, I'm not really sure why exactly that happened. It never changed, though. You know how you're working on a book and you might have a title and you may go, you know, I don't like that enough, or you're changing, or you may even use a temporary title. That title never changed, but I don't really know why or where exactly that came from in my mind.
I know the feeling, actually. For me, sometimes the title comes very quickly, and then sometimes it comes after you're completed with the story, and you're like, okay, that's it. And I totally understand you there. I like the title because it is kind of doesn't really know what it's about. But as I was reading the story, because it's largely a farming agricultural community, that's what I was thinking about. But hey, it could mean something else to someone else who's reading the story. I know there isn't an author in the world who doesn't mind if someone has a different interpretation of their work than we do, because we like to see different ideas flow through the words that God gives us to write. Now, in the story, we're following the story through our main protagonist. His name is Seth. And his friend, who is the guy, as you mentioned earlier in the interview, his friend is the guy who was accused of killing this girl, even though they never found the body. And how would you describe Seth? He's a very interesting character. I get the idea. He is very low to earth, down to earth. He's very introspective, but he's very respectful of people. So he's he's like a nice guy. He's a nice guy that's just really telling you, hey, this is what happened back in the day. That's the idea I get, because he's obviously telling the story from some point in the future. So tell us about this main character and what it means for you as the author when you describe him to our readers.
Sure. Let me digress for one moment in terms of the characters. So August St. Clair is the main character that we're following in this story. And so the man, or the boy I should say at the time, who is accused of her murder, his name is Clay, and he goes to prison, so we won't give away too much, for her murder. But the story is being told by somebody else. So it's a sort of a unique point of view. It's not first person, and it's a third person that's telling the story. So here's the interesting thing about it. So what's Seth like, but also what does Seth know being in that third person perspective telling you the story? So Seth has to know everything that took place in order to tell you the story, or he has to find out from someone. So what that did in the novel was make it particularly important that those dots all got connected. So because August sometimes is telling him what happened, he knows some of what happened, but he ends up being the one that has a relationship with August We'll leave it at that. So his character is both Seth and Clay are good old boys. They were on the football team together. They're in a rural community. They're both big guys, pretty big guys. Seth's not quite as big as Seth's bigger than Clay. The physical stature of them is important in the story, I think, because they're farmers. And where I grew up in Petaluma, when we played them in football, those were usually the biggest guys. They just were bigger boys, bigger men. So he's not a good old boy in the old sense of the word. He's a young man in the 70s, comes from a farming community. And he's got a good heart. He's trying to see his way through what's happening in this town. Because when August St. Clair comes back after everyone thought she was dead, they don't like her. They don't want her around. They think she's evil. And somebody has to stick up for her, and that's who does that. Seth is the one who sticks up for her, and ultimately through that, other things occur. But the whole town gets changed in the story. And so it's a story of change between people because August has changes. We talk about Christianity in our stories. Well, she's not a Christian when she starts the story. When she disappears off a cliff into the Pacific Ocean, and nobody knows where she went and what happened to her. And then her boyfriend, Clay, gets accused of her murder. So when she comes back after 10 years, he's getting out of San Quentin prison, which is a prison right not that far from that area. All these elements come together in this town, and some of these people that were responsible for her being forced off that cliff are now in danger of being exposed. So you've got all these different elements coming together with different 10 years later. If that kind of gives you an idea of Seth.
I love small town dramas because small towns are actually treasure troves for scandal. And it happens that in small towns, secrets are kept very long, traditions are held for a very long time, and it can go against the grain if you start to change things. And that's one of the reasons why I appreciated so much of the detail that you put into this town, because when these things happen and they start to this roller coaster of events and this cascade of events, they're going against the tradition of the town. The things have always been the same. And that is quite scary. The one thing about faith and our faith in Christ is that he is not here to be a stagnant God. He is a God of movement. He is a God of involvement. Love, they say love is an action word. It's not stagnant. Love continues to move. It continues to continue to give love, if you will. And so I like this aspect of the story too. And with August, we have this interesting dynamic with her. Now that you mention it, I honestly see what you mean now. She actually is the main character of the story because everything centers around her disappearance. But Seth is the one telling the story from a third-person point of view, almost like third gossip. And I'm glad you mentioned that because now I see it. I didn't see it when I was reading it, you know, because I think of Seth, he's the one telling us the story, but it's about her. So really glad you put that out there for me to understand, Anthony. And with August, though, when she goes into the cliff and she falls, when she falls over the cliff and she hits that water, it is a really low point in her life. And I was thinking of the song Love Lifted Me when she, because she comes back, that's not a spoiler, when she comes back, you know, she was sinking. And then when she tells the story of what happened, she said, I heard someone say, don't push, pull. And it was the first thing that came to mind was Love Lifted Me, that song. I was thinking of Ethan, Far From the Peaceful Shore. I mean, that is like the epitome of her life there. And as I was reading the story, I said, wow, she went from being pushed over a cliff into coming back alive. And so you can't help but see the parallel with the message of Christ taking the dead and bringing it back to life again. Only he can do that. I always think about the narrative in Ezekiel, I think. I may have it wrong. And we know the song, them bones, dry bones, that song. And in that particular passage, you know, the Lord said, Son of Man, can these bones live? And he looked out there and he said, behold, there are bones and they were very dry. Like he said, you know what, Lord, you know. And I think that's when we surrender. If he could take a dead situation, turn it back to life. And so there's a lot of parallel that I saw in this book as I was reading it. Another character of interest is Clay. Now, I do not want you to tell the linchpin with Clay, Anthony. But Clay is a very interesting character because he is accused of something he didn't do. And he constantly has this stigma on him, and it affects him. He went to prison. It wasn't his fault. So talk to me about what is the message you're trying to tell the reader through the character of Clay about life, especially when life does you wrong?
Well, the real impetus, for the story is the change that occurs with August. I won't go into complete detail, but what she does at the end of this story, or three quarters of the way through the story, the third act, is that she's come to God in a real, real way. So when she comes back to this town, her impact upon the other people in the town, I think of the main antagonist, Bane O'Camp. I thought about that name for a long. Bane O'Camp is his name, and then he's got another buddy. I forget his name now. He's a big, and he's just kind of a goofball. But Bane O'Camp. So these people are really, they don't want her around. But what she does as a Christian in the story is, I think, what really makes the story blossom at the end, because she comes back with a forgiveness of heart. Because she's become a real Christian. But not only does she do that, there's power in her now. It's the power of God and Christ in her, working in a situation where she actually changes everyone's life around her. Now, talking about what you asked me about, Clay, not everyone in this story really changes. Clay's got a girlfriend that's not really a very good person at all. And we don't really know what happens to Clay. We know what happens with Seth, but we don't know what happens with Clay. So Clay is, in the story, changed by her, but the thing is, when she comes back to the town and Clay is there and they confront one another, he has to learn to forgive her. And he does do that. Because she is able to explain to him. I'm not going to go into too many details with that, but he actually does forgive her. And that's a big key in this book, forgiveness, thankfulness and forgiveness. I like to call them cousins. So in this story, there's change between a good number of the characters. But when you're writing Christian fiction, you got to remember, just like in life, not everyone believes what you do. Not everyone is going to believe in Jesus Christ and God Almighty. So just in like a story that you're writing, if you try to make it too, if these characters are all becoming, you know, something that they're not really going to become, it doesn't become realistic. For me anyway, so writing a story like this where you have this dynamic between this town and these people, some that really have a hate for this girl, but get changed in the process, but don't become a Christian, but realize that she's something special now, that she has a gift that she's giving to the town. That in its own right becomes an example of Jesus Christ. So, you know, it's always a dichotomy between how are you going to present someone as a Christian versus how is somebody that's not a Christian in your story, and what's it going to do as you work your way through this situation, and ultimately you complete your story so that it's satisfying to someone who reads it.
I like that you make those distinctions as well, Anthony, because that is important. Like I said, because the story is being told through Seth POV about the impact that August has on this town, you're going to be definitely going in for a wild ride. And so it's fascinating how you wrote the story. Like I said, it's a very good immersive, kind of engulfing story as you continue to read, because all these things start to unravel and unwrap as you read The First Rains of October. Again, that is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure to go ahead and pick up your copy today. Now, I do want you to read an excerpt, Anthony, from The First Rains of October. But before I do that, I do want to talk about some of your other books that you have out there, and you can go in any order you'd like. Just tell us a hint of it. Don't give us the spoilers or anything, but tell us about your other works. We know about Asuriki, which is a sci-fi story. We know about Jonah, but you just kind of touched on them. Now I want you to go a little more detail into each book that you have there.
Okay, so Catching Baby Moses, story of a white middle class young boy. He starts out at 12 years old, and his parents abandon him. His name is Norton Ryder, and he's in a very nice upper class middle class neighborhood, and his parents abandon him in a very horrible divorce, and his father and his mother leaves, and he's left pretty much on his own, and his father loses his home, so he has to move into it. And in the meantime, he's got no one or nobody. And he becomes, he's a football player, little high school football player. So in the process, he meets a man who lives on the other side of the Delta. And that man is a former NFL football star. His name is Percy Hawkins. And so Percy Hawkins takes Norton under his wings and starts to help him with football. And in the meantime, a crime occurs, and they're both involved. And so it's kind of a reverse, it's an interracial story of mentoring is what it is. So that was the first story I wrote. The second one, First Rains of October, then I worked on Jonah. And Jonah was a good little bit of time. And Jonah and the Time of the Kings is the story of Jonah, the prophet, who God sends to Nineveh, the most wicked, vile place on the face of the earth. And he tells Jonah, you go to Nineveh because I want you to preach to those people that if they don't change, I'm going to destroy the city and all of them. And the funny thing about Jonah, you all know about Jonah and the whale, but very few people know about Jonah the prophet, because they all think that Jonah was a coward. Because God says, Jonah, you're going to Nineveh. And Jonah said, no, I'm not. I'm going south. I'm going somewhere else. He gets in a boat, and he goes south and ends up being swallowed by a whale and spit out again. And people don't really believe the story could have happened. But actually, it did happen. And so that was part of the greatness of writing the book, is learning what kind of a whale can swallow a person, and the person does live. And that's a sperm whale. And by the way, just as a side note, the sperm whale has been known to swallow people in history with documentation, and they've gotten a few people out of sperm whales 3 days later. So just so you know, it's really happened, and it's been documented. From whalers who were out there trying to kill it. Yeah, it really did happen. So all these things went into Jonah. And Jonah is a story of what happens when Jonah gets spit back up where he left in Joppa, where my son and I were visiting. We went to Israel to that place, actually. And then Jonah took that journey to Nineveh, this city. Now, just a key point, I'll just make this point real kind of, because it's kind of unique and another sidebar. The reason Jonah didn't want Nineveh to repent is because he knew that the Assyrians were going to attack Israel and take it over. He knew it. So God was asking him to go to preach to a country, a bunch of warriors who were going to, in fact, take over Israel in the north. And that's exactly what they did. So it's not that he was a coward. He didn't really want to do it. he was going against his own country. But he did what God said. Once he got spit out by that whale, he took off where God told him to go, and he went to Nineveh, and he preached to the king and queen of Nineveh. And they did, in fact, in history, repent. They repented to God. It's almost unbelievable. This man, Jonah, walks into this violent city of a million people with a wall around it, surrounding miles wide, walks in there, and here he is, and it's like a Jew going into Nazi Germany. That's what it was like. Can you imagine the fear he had? But he ended up right in front of the king and queen of Nineveh, and he preached to them, and he told them, and they did repent. It's historically documented by the Assyrians. They did repent, and for a number of years, right after Jonah was there, there was no more wars. There were peaceful people for a while, and then finally they went into Israel and took it over, and there you have it. So that was the third book, and of course, Assurity is my latest book. I always wanted to write a sci-fi novel. My mother inspired me with that when I was young, but I wanted it to have some uniqueness to it in terms of what's happening. So in Assurity, the characters are unique in the sense that one of the characters is a computer named Isaac Newton, and he is the most Christian of anybody on this ship. And I'll leave it at that, because as we all know, Isaac Newton did more biblical works than he ever did scientific. And if you didn't know that, it's true. They bury it because they don't want you to know that. Isaac Newton wrote more biblical works than he did scientific. And so he's the main computer, and he's the one who preaches to everybody else. And the characters are unique. I kind of juxtaposition them in different ways, and it's fun and exciting, and I just love writing. So.
Well, we definitely got a nice taste of your writing, and that's the nice thing about having an eclectic backlist, is that you got something for someone's tickle bone, that get their funny bone tickling. You got it for that one. So I guess your next work is going to have to be a romance, because I write romance and I like romances, so you'll have to write one for me, Anthony, when the idea comes to you. And what we're going to do is take a quick short break. When we come back, Anthony is going to read an excerpt, a two-minute excerpt from The First Rains of October. And if you want to pick up your copy of the book, it's on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. You still have an opportunity to call in at 646-668-8485 and press that 1 to be live on air. We'll be right back after these messages.
Sofa Talk Podcast will consider Spurgeon's morning and evening devotionals, which deal with all of the things that we are fearful and anxious of, like job, family, and our country. Plus, we will take your prayer requests. Join us on upcoming episodes Monday through Friday for Sofa Talk at anchor.fm/Russell-Sherard. That's anchor.fm/Russell-Sherard.
Conflict is expensive.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
And this is Get Hope.
Emotionally, financially, relationally, it diverts valuable energy essential to accomplishing just normal activities that we're involved in every day. A study of on-the-job issues ranked marriage and career conflicts as events that rob people of personal peace and productivity. You know, Jesus came to resolve the ultimate conflict between humans and God, and he's still resolving conflict today. A conflicted relationship that comes before God in prayer suddenly gives way to avenues of forgiveness and reconciliation. Got a big conflict in your life? Well, tell Jesus about it in detail, and you'll be surprised at what happens.
In today's chaotic world, isn't it good to know there's hope? And if you'd like more hope, Lauren Libby has resources available,
including a free 30-day devotional he'd be happy to send to you.
Get yours today at GetHopeRadio.com.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then AuthorShout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services, to include a member zone, that will help you get the word out about your books.
Our team here at AuthorShout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by AuthorShout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Hi, is your book club in need of some fresh and exciting questions to ask club members and authors at your next book club meeting? Literizations, the book conversation game, is 70 thought-provoking questions to really get into an in-depth discussion about the books you and your club members are reading. These questions really get into the characters, the storyline, and into the author's head. These questions may just give you and your book club members a whole new way to get into a new conversation, a literization. Literizations is also a great set of tools for bloggers, interviewers, and authors to use a discussion question. Are you ready to get lit? Please visit our website at litversations.com, LITVERSATIO.com. And please like our Facebook page at Simply Said Reading Accessories. Thank you.
The Speculative Fiction Cantina is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to a special edition of The Right Stuff with the Queen, Parker J. I have been having such a wonderful time talking to my guest co-host and contributor, Anthony Barbera. He is the author of the book we've been highlighting today called The First Rains of October, but he also has other works in the mix as well. If you like sci-fi, you like biblical history, and if you like coming of age, they're all available under his Amazon page on Amazon. And so, Anthony, I want to again thank you for being with me on the show here. We were going to have you read an excerpt, but if we did that, we wouldn't have enough time to really get the gist of the story, because this story does involve you actually being immersed into it. But there was one section I wanted to read where August is talking to Seth, and she's talking about the missionary, because she was part of a missionary over there, and she talks about the tribal people there. And so she talks about the work that they did, and Seth is starting to think things here. So I'll just go ahead, Anthony, and read this one, then we'll chit-chat about it really quickly. I thought to myself, why are we so eager to assume that Europeans are the only advanced race in the world? She squinted at me with that look, the one that leaves out the words, like she knew what I was thinking. Seth, they were murdering each other. They were headhunters and killers before we arrived. Should we be more tolerant? Maybe we should be, but would you stand there and let, while someone threw their baby off a cliff as an offering to the gods? Hey, wait a minute, I didn't bring any of this up. She leaned sideways and nudged me with her shoulder. Yeah, but I can see that you're thinking exactly that, and it all goes with the territory. All of that, we've got to be so very open-minded of everyone. As if every imagination of the thoughts of man is acceptable, no right and no wrong. And as I was telling Anthony before the show, this was a very interesting part of the story, because I had some thoughts about this for a blog post I am preparing for my biweekly contribution to stuckofthefaith.com. And I thought this was very insightful, because August actually was in a position where she saw heinous things happen to people. And without getting too deep into the conversation, nowadays people are holding culture up as the for-all and be-all. But if you're in the position, like she said, of someone throwing their children over a cliff or sacrificing their children to God, do you just let them do that, or do you intervene? And these are very interesting questions, because people want to say, well, it's not up to you to say what's right and what's wrong. But then you have to say, do I let you mistreat anyone? And so it really becomes the thing of how far are we going to let wild imagination go. So tell us what some of your thoughts were when you included this one particular segment in the story.
Sure. So this all went back to Star Trek and the Prime Directive. Well, I remember seeing that, and they could not impose any of their ideas on these cultures that were evolving in space. And that idea,
Anthony, let me stop you really quickly. Stop you really quickly because I'm a Trekkie, diehard Star Trek fan, diehard, like insanely Star Trek fan. Okay,
so
I know about the Prime Directive. Okay, so just want to let you know you're talking to the choir here. So keep going.
That's okay. I love Star Trek too. So, but that's where that came from. Because when I watched that, I thought to myself, "No, wait a minute." And that was the thought process that went into what, because the first missionaries that went into the Amazon were murdered by the tribal Indians because they thought that they were doing some kind of witchcraft on them. They used a mirror. The missionaries shined a mirror at the tribal people, and they thought it was some kind of a witch thing or something, and they killed them. They murdered them. So it took some time before people started to learn about Christ. So do we think it's okay? They were headhunters. That's exactly what they were. They're still headhunters deep in the jungles. Whether they're actually doing that now, I'm not sure, but they certainly were then. And so do we sit back and let people headhunt one another? Or do we introduce Christ to them so that they can begin to have a life that reflects something that's godly? Because the other is just devilish. It's from the devil. So that was my thought process in that. That's what went into that. Even though you like Star Trek, and so do I. Well, yeah.
But see, the thing is, Captain Kirk was always breaking the Prime Directive. And Captain Picard wouldn't. But Captain Kirk was always breaking the Prime Directive. And he would go to the devil with the Prime Directive. We can't let these people do that. My favorite episode is The Apple, when they were under the ruler of this machine called Vol. And Spock was like, they're happy, they're healthy, why are you bothering them? And McCoy is like, you can't let people, you know, serve a tin metal machine or something like that. So, yeah, as soon as I saw this, I was thinking about the episode. But it's funny because we want to be respectful of people's traditions and culture, things of that nature. But when things are harmful, do you just sit there and let them not become educated? Let's take it from a secular point of view, if you want. You may say, well, Parker and Anthony, you're just talking that because of whatever. And I say, okay, fine. But from a secular point of view, I remember watching an episode on Netflix, and this guy was talking about first contact with this tribal culture that was in a jungle. I don't know where. I can't remember right this second. But the tribal people actually reached out to the surrounding neighborhoods because they needed help. And I think apparently what was happening, there were some kind of soldiers there. I don't know if they were like drug lords or a rival soldier, something. But they were being killed. And they reached out to get help. And the guy said, it's not fair to leave these tribal cultures as if it's okay to leave them in ignorance. He said, it's not fair. It's not right. They have the right to know that there's a different way of living. And they did not understand the language. They only had one word that was the same in both their language. And the word was good. And so they were talking, they were like, I'm whatever the word is, and you're whoever the word is. And so when they were able to translate it, the tribal people were like, wow, they were singing or whatever, because the tribal people started singing, and then the outsiders started singing. And the tribal people, when they were able to translate, were like, wow, these people suck. They can't sing at all. I'm like dogging out the outsiders. And they were able to get them help. They were able to educate them. And then they were able to have native translators who can talk in the same dialect as their language. It took the tribal people some time to understand what they were saying because it was in a different dialect, but they were able to understand it. And I'll never forget, Anthony, as I watched that show, I'm going to put this in my blog post too. The tribal lady said, I love these the most. And you know what she held up? She held up a pair of shoes. And she said, I will never go back to being barefoot. And I was sitting there like, oh, my gosh, that is the most womanly, feminine thing on planet Earth is new shoes. And they have been walking around without shoes for years. And she had shoes. She was like, I will never go back to being barefoot. And she had so many different color sandals. And she liked to put them up on the side of her hut or whatever. And I said, why would we deny the woman shoes just to keep their culture intact? You know, it was very fascinating watching that show. And that's why when I saw this in your book, I was so surprised that you also had that idea, even though it came through and through fiction. I was also surprised that, because I had been thinking about that a lot. Like, do we not intervene if something is wrong? We're not talking about changing people's traditions per se. We're not talking about ripping out and assimilating the culture like the Borg. We're not doing that. We're just talking about giving you a different perspective. And sometimes nowadays, well, don't tell me if it's true or not. I want to feel good about what I'm doing. And that is what's quite devastating right now, is that we don't care if it's true. We just want to feel good about the choices that we make. But that's another subject for another time. And we are out of time, speaking of which. So, Anthony, I want to thank you so much for being here with me today. Where can we find you online?
Let me just say thank you for having me. I enjoyed this a lot, so I really appreciate you asking me how you found me. I have a website. It's called anthonybarbera.com. It's B-A-R-B-E-R-A, anthonybarbera.com, and it's got all my books on there and how to and things about, you know, there's a blog on there that I write. I haven't been writing it enough lately because, you know, when you're an author, You got to keep writing. But anyway, anthonybarbera.com, and all my books are on Amazon. Some of them are on book other places, Barnes & Noble and all that. So they're in most places, mostly online. I think you can get them in Barnes & Noble, but mostly it's better to buy them by Amazon. They'll get them to you in a day or two. So if you want to read something, I appreciate it. Love to have those reviews that people do. They're so important. And thank you for having me. I really had a good time.
Well, before I let you go, I always want to make sure that we encourage our aspiring authors out there whom God has given the gift to write, to pick up a pen and do so. So in the few moments that we have left, go ahead and encourage them out there today.
Oh, well, just keep writing. I mean, that's what you do. You just get in there and just write and finish the first one. And I guess the one thing I would say is, whatever you do, don't worry about how long it takes you. Just do the very best job you can, and don't stop until it's right.
Anthony, once again, thank you so much for being with us on this show. And I cannot wait to have you back, and have you back real soon.
Thank you.
And we were talking today to Anthony Barbera. He is the author of the book, The First Rains of October. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Really enjoyed my conversation with him today. When you read the book, The First Rains of October, you really are going to be swept away by the narrative. It's one of those books that you can sit down and cuddle, wrap yourself up in a nice thick blanket, have your coffee if you're a coffee drinker, or if you're like me, who's a tea drinker, have your tea with you. And you're just going to visit the town and the county of Fallon. You're going to follow the events in the story, and you're going to see this transformation take place throughout the course of the narrative. One thing about the book is that you can't skip through it, because it's impossible to skip through it. You're not going to be like, oh, I want to hurt people. You're going to really follow along, and I think that's just so effective of his writing style and his wordsmith skills. But he also has other works available. So go ahead and see what he's all about. He has sci-fi, coming of age, and biblical history, so there's something to tickle your funny bones. So go ahead and visit him on his website that he shared with us today. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.